While a lot of comics are making jokes about safe subjects, Reno jokes about safe sex and how so many of her friends are dying of AIDS.
It's ridiculous. All my friends are dying. You know, I don't know what to do. You know, I have one of these address books that every year you've got to change it, you know, because it's also a day-to-day book. So every year I got to change. I don't know what to do with the dead friends. You can't, like, just leave them out. That's kind of cold, right? So I figured, okay, move them to the next one. Well, but they don't have, like, phone numbers anymore. They just have, like, some of them might still have phone numbers. You know, they left the little answering announcement, you know. No one ever calls you back anyway. What the hell, you know. And then I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe I could just put them, you know, integrate them into my alive friends and put, like, a cross next to them. So you know how they do it in the literary places. But, of course, my friends are not Christian, so I'm not going to put a cross next to them. You know, maybe I'll put a little...
A lot of Reno's material is about sexual politics. Because her subjects are so potent and controversial, she first worked performance spaces and has gradually begun to make her way into the more mainstream comedy clubs. Before she started doing stand-up, she performed with underground theater groups and toured with Lilith Women's Theater. I spoke with Reno about her comic style and asked her if she ever felt uncomfortable talking about AIDS in her stand-up routine. She told me that even years ago she was talking about AIDS in her performances.
I noticed that a lot of the gay men did not know about AIDS. They, you know, and I had known about AIDS since pretty much the first patient, it seemed, since about 1980, I think. And I couldn't believe it, you know. And so I thought, well, I'll do this bit. And people all, you know, laugh and also are in dismay about it. I mean, you got to confront it. I mean, the entire world has changed because of it.
Well, you even talk about having so many friends dying. And
oh, that piece. Oh, yeah, that's intense, that piece. You're right. Yeah, not knowing whether to transfer my dead friends' names into my new address book every year because I have one that you have to change year by year. Yeah, there are some audiences that really relate to that because everybody's had so many people to die that have died over the last couple of years. There are other audiences that you just couldn't bother. I mean, I had an audience that just plain safe sex talk meant nothing to them. I had a week in Albany, and in fact, I was fired from the week because they said that no one knew what the, you know, they couldn't care less about what I was talking about. I mean, you know, I was talking about heroin and condoms and things that I kind of relate to, and these folks weren't, and the owner of the club said, you know, I'll pay you for the rest of the week, and I respect you for what you're doing, but my audience is, you know, they would rather talk about the supermarket.
So is this going to force you to tone down your material?
No. No, I'm just, frankly, I'm content with a long view. I feel that it's going to take me, and it has taken me, a while. And it's going to continue to take me a while, but I'm not generic, and I never will be. Not that I'm trying not to be. It's just not me. I don't watch TV. I don't really have the time. It never occurs to me to watch TV. I'm not going to do parodies of television programs because it's bogus. It doesn't matter. I don't care to do that. I'd rather, you know, perform once a year. It's okay with me. And the money stuff, well, right now, you know, I'm really, really broke, but so what? It'll get better. And I don't, you know, I don't have any desire to get laughs off of the, you know, the sweat of somebody else or, you know, how a person looks or whatever is some of the, you know.
One of the things you seem to do is improvise a lot, improvise for real when you're on stage,
mm-hmm.
at least in the performance spaces.
Mm-hmm.
That's a risky thing because it's not necessarily going to be funny every
mm-hmm.
time when you take a chance when you improvise.
Right.
You've probably learned by now. What is the worst thing that can happen if you take that chance and it doesn't work? So what's the worst thing that can happen, and have you experienced it yet, and has that given you the courage to just keep trying it?
Well, I don't know. I guess it hasn't happened. I suppose the worst thing that could happen was that, you know, they stand up screaming, saying, "You're disgustingly not funny. You're making us sick. Could you get the heck off the stage?" That hasn't happened yet, but sure, I've fallen in front of people. I haven't made things connect. You know, it's mostly out of you know, I mean, a lack of confidence. I mean, if I let myself, I mean, I can trust, I think by now, I should be able to trust that what I'm going to say is not going to be, you know, racist or horrific towards anyone. And if it doesn't make people laugh, well, you know, that's to me not a crime. And so when I can get that kind of real self-acceptance, then it doesn't matter what the heck I do, because people are going to be with you, because people like confidence. It makes them feel comfortable. And if we can just let go of the critic inside, meaning also you jumping inside the audience's head and saying, oh my God, she's awful, oh my God, you know, and all the chatter that you think is going on in their mind, then, you know, I can just fly.
You do the kind of act that I could imagine your mother being very uncomfortable with. Have you ever performed with your parents around?
Well, I have a funny parent kind of situation. And without bothering to go into the weirdness of it, no, they have never even asked what I'm doing, let alone come to a performance. I went to their house for an hour on Christmas, right? And I mentioned to my mother that there had been this lovely article written about me this week in the Village Voice. And did she want to see it? And, you know, she never responded. And at one point, towards the last 10 minutes I was there, she said, what's that on the floor? And I said, well, that's that article I was mentioning, Ma. And she said, well, pick it up. Your father just vacuumed. You know? So.
I get it.
Yeah.
Did you ever go through a period of just wanting to perform in front of women?
No.
Because I know some women do.
Yeah, no. I really like eclectic. I like the world, you know. But in other words, what I'm trying to say is that I like talking with and, you know, for anybody. I mean, I do subway humor.
Subway humor?
You know what I mean. I'll do shtick in the subway because people look so darn glum. I'll just do some, you know, one of the simpler things I remember a couple of nights ago is, you know, the subway driver or the rails or something, some combination of both, made it seem like we were in the big kahuna, you know, like, let's go surfing now. So I started acting like I was surfing, you know, and I was taking a tumble and stuff. People were hysterical, and people who weren't even looking at each other, and who, if they were, they were looking with steaming glances. They just lightened up. Everything was great. I love that. It's my favorite thing to do. I tell you, if I could, you know, make a living, I almost wanted, well, I don't want to say this over the air because somebody will steal the idea. I wanted to write a grant for the National Endowment that I'll do humor on the streets of New York, you know, 20 hours a week.
You know, I bet it would be a good way of protecting yourself because people would think that you were crazy and nobody would mug you.
Oh, honey, that's so funny. Terry, I have a bit like that.
Do you really?
Mm-hmm. I have a bit like that. Oh,
No, no, tell me about it.
Oh, yeah, well, let me think. It's something like this guy came up to me and he's like right straight in my face. And he says to me, oh, baby, you are looking so beautiful tonight. And I look at myself, I said, what are you, kidding me? My pants don't fit. My hair is grown out. My cat's upstairs. She's coughing. I don't know. Does she have feline leukemia or something? What do you think that is? He's like down the block by this point. He's like, okay, baby, we'll see you later. I discovered a rape deterrent. You know, you don't, you're afraid of what somebody's going to do to you in New York. You just tell them what's going on with you. People don't, won't hurt you if you're acting crazy, I suppose.
You're pretty much an original. Do you feel like you have any models at all?
Well, there was the battleship Regalia. No. Models. People I love.
Who?
Lily, of course.
Uh-huh.
Lily Tomlin. I once made her laugh the entire time she was handing out autographs outside of a theater I saw her at in San Francisco, and that was a big deal.
You were doing shtick while she was signing autographs?
Yeah, yeah. I was just, you know, this is way before I was in the business. Richard Pryor, I think, is brilliant. You know, I think that his homophobia is obnoxious, but that was years ago. I don't know if he's still into that now. Well, I love Bette Midler.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she doesn't really do stand-up, but she's hysterically funny, and the energy, you know, she has that sort of drag queenish, you know, core, all sorts of people dig her, and that's what I like. That's what I like. I mean, to see some lady with the, you know, pursed lips next to some hip-hop kid laughing at the same stuff. Yeah.
Okay, well, Reno, thank you very much for talking with us.
Okay, Terry.
Reno spoke with us from the NPR Bureau in New York. Her next appearance is at La Mama Experimental Theater in New York City in a program called One Night Stands. This is Fresh Air.